ORM, more like OMG. Breaking news, I discovered that Guido is Dutch.
And not what do you think he was?
You mean the word, or is this a person? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Guido is our DHH. He was the BDFL.
Yes.
And the creator of Python.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he would be more our...
He's the Brennan Eich of Python.
Yeah, or I can never remember.
Guy that made Ruby.
Yeah, the guy who made Ruby.
Yehuda Katz.
No,
it wasn't Yehuda Katz, was it?
No, Yehuda made other stuff in Ruby.
What did he make in Ruby?
Ember, for one, and a lot of strong Ember's opinions.
Ember is JavaScript.
That's true.
Ember is the JavaScript that tried to be Rails real hard.
What did Yehuda make? Someone else look up.
Google.
Matz is the Ruby.
Yeah, Matz is
there
Ruby.
We go. There
well, I always confuse Matz with Sandy Metz.
Yeah.
And Sandy Metz is the one who like revolutionized real small code. No method can have more than five lines. Is it one line?
No, I don't know.
But it's super. Is he super small?
Did he write clean code?
No, that's Uncle Bob.
Okay. So that is Uncle Bob.
That is definitely Uncle Bob. Clean code is Uncle Bob.
That makes sense. Okay.
And Sandy Metz took it a step further. Let me find where she said her rules to live by. They're around here somewhere.
Because like in clean code, which I've been reading for like 5 years, digesting it slowly.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. Like a Python. But don't. Is, you know, every function should do one thing and do one thing really well. And that I agree with, but that's kind of, it's hard to do in practice, right? In theory, I definitely agree with it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you got to do more things to do the one thing.
So here are our Sandy Metz's rules. Classes can be no longer than 100 lines long. Methods can be no longer than 5 lines long. Pass no more than 4 parameters into a method. Hash options are parameters. And controllers can instantiate only one object. Therefore, views can only know about one instance variable, and views can only send messages to that object.
Some of that I agree with.
Yeah, I agree with most of it. It's not as restrictive as I remember it. I remember it being far more restrictive. These days, I tend to, I like code that's written that way for sure.
Yeah, agree. But. And I just don't use classes, so.
Yeah.
Boom.
You have no class.
Well, you don't have classes.
That's true. I work with JavaScript.
Not real ones.
You walked into that.
Yeah.
It was good, though.
So, okay. So, I Googled Yehuda Katz.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how prolific is this dude? Helped create Ember. He's on the Rust core team. Was on the Ruby on Rails team, the jQuery core team. He's on ECMAScript's TC39 committee. He created Thor, Handlebars, Bundler, Cargo. Cargo is the Rust package manager, but Bundler is the Ruby one, I think.
Handlebars, that makes a lot of sense because that's a standard.
That's crazy.
Ember.
That's a ton of shit.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Flask dude.
What is his name?
Miguel something.
I don't know that one.
Like he's doing all kinds of, he does all sorts of things.
It's like last week we talked about TJ Holloway Chuck.
Yes.
We did.
Or just tried to confirm whether he was a real person or not.
Yeah, I'm sad to have missed that discussion.
What do you have to say about TJ?
Yeah.
Just that I kind of went down the same rabbit hole that I think a lot of people that find out about him do, which is like, you know, the hive mind versus real person thing.
Oh, that. You and I have talked about that before, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just find it incredibly interesting Like, I don't think there's anybody else in the programming world that's quite like his either person or persona.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mystery there, right?
Yeah.
He's a very private person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. No,
go for it.
I was going to find out. I finally found the Ryan Bates analog, because if you're a Rails developer, you've guaranteed to have watched a bunch of Ryan Bates videos for RailsCast.
Well, unless you just started doing Rails in the last like year or two.
That's true. Yeah. Because he quit for a while and then he went back to doing it. Has he quit again?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen a RailsCast that isn't from like 2010 or 11 or 12 or something.
It's true. You can tell when I became a Rails developer for sure in that regard. Oh, but Corey Schaefer is the Python equivalent. He's the video tutorial guy that everybody's just like, watch all my video tutorials.
Mm-hmm. So, see if
last RailsCast was made in June of 2013.
Oh, wow. Long time ago.
Episode 415.
That was like the heyday, right? Of Rails.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that adds up. We've got an upgrading to Rails 4 video and quite a few other things. So, I mean, Rails has still obviously got tons of stuff built on it.
Mm. Yeah.
People like, still making the magic happen with Rails.
Yeah. But for a while, though, I feel like that's all you ever heard about. That was the hot new thing.
Oh, man.
Rails and CoffeeScript.
Mm.
I missed out then, because I think I started writing Rails after the big wave of popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
That's probably a good thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Because it was kind of crazy there for a while. Because we were joking about who would win in a fight, an actual fight, or a Twitter fight for that matter, between DHH and Yehuda Katz. Because there were so many big personalities in the Rails community.
Mm. Mm.
So many. And like, it was nuts. And you could kind of watch stuff unfold all over the place. Then we had like, and I know I've referenced it a bunch, but Zed Shaw like, getting all mad and leaving the Rails community. And now he's a Python developer and a painter. definitely, again, worth a follow on Twitter if you can get him to accept your follow.
I love Zed Shaw. I love Zed Shaw so much.
Zed's crazy.
To accept your follow? He's got a private
account? Yeah, he's got a private account. He got tired of people following him, I guess. And so he's got a private account.
Well, I think people would follow him and then bitch about.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. So.
And Zed is not the person to tolerate that kind of nonsense. No. So.
Man, Yehuda Katz is like all about PowerShell right now, it looks like.
PowerShell. He's gone to the dark side.
No. Uh-oh. Fun with PowerShell. Let's get started.
I'll be honest. I was looking the other day at getting a gaming PC with Windows 10 because of the Linux kernel that's going to be built into it in July. Because I have no way to get... I don't have time to play video games.
Right.
But any time that my preferred way to play games would be in VR. I've always loved the VR games that have been coming out recently. They're a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Super immersive, and you can do all kinds of stuff with them. And so any kind of investment in a gaming rig would have to have a VR as an option. It's what's kept me from pulling the trigger on like a Switch, because you can't do VR on a Switch, but you can do it with a PS.
Mm.
And so I considered, because my personal laptop is on the way out. Like it's old and it's tired and it needs to go to greener pastures.
Think about two birds, one stone.
That was what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. That was what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I've been so far out of PC gaming culture. I like looked.
It's still the same.
Oh man,
it's PC Master Race.
Yeah, for sure. But I was like, what's going to be the cheapest, best?
Mm.
Or how can I cheaply get a gaming PC? And so I remember Walmart came out with gaming PCs.
Don't do it, dude.
And they still did. But the Walmart gaming PC starts at $1,400.
Yeah, and it's a piece of shit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't gonna go spend $1,400 on a computer from Walmart anyway.
Sure.
You can build one for cheaper. That's better.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, or about probably you know comparable, but yeah, definitely better. Yeah.
Honestly, you only need like $400 to build something like decent anymore. Really? It's crazy how cheap stuff's gotten. Yeah,
except for the video card.
Which
if it's a gaming PC, you're probably gonna spend $400 alone on your video card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
video card and
AMD recently came out with some like onboard graphics chips that are fairly decent.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah.
Depends on how gung ho you are.
We may have to put together the hive mind, the TJ, and build me a gaming PC / Linux machine.
I want a Slack bot. That's the TJ bot.
That'd be awesome. We can build one.
There's a cool site out there, Parts Picker.
Yeah, PC Part Picker.
Yeah, that's fun to just play around with and dream.
There's some really good, like, if it's been a while, there are a few really good YouTube channels that'll get you back in.
Oh, I mean, it's been a very long while, since the, late 90s, early aughts.
Okay, so Paul's Hardware is what the one that I would suggest on YouTube. And he does, like, every month he'll do like a build and people will vote on what kind of machines. Like he'll do like a budget machine or a really expensive one. Like I think once he built like a $10,000 computer or something, and then he gives them away after he builds them. But you watch him do everything. Mm-hmm. So and then he links the PC Part Picker and you can get that exact awesome. Machine. Nice. So
PC Part Picker's got this great app basically in there that lets you just start picking parts and it tells you if they're compatible or not. So you can just build out a dream machine. Like
it's way easier than it used to be.
Yeah. I was at NTI. That was one of the, in one of the hardware classes that was like a semester final was to just build a dream machine. So I went really hard and I would have spent, you know, this is air quotes. I'm doing air quotes right now, but I would have spent 20 grand. A big portion of that was I had like a terabyte SSD.
Be pretty spendy.
Yeah. And then also had like a server room backup power for my gaming computer is what I would want. So power could go out, but I keep rolling.
Yeah.
A terabyte SSD right now is only $250.
Yeah. It's crazy now.
Yeah, that's a 2 terabyte. So
I'm looking at
hardware is just diving in prices.
Yeah, like they've got on PC Part Picker on the front page here. Here's like 2 builds. They also do that. They'll just have a build that you can follow and do, and like one is 980 and another one's 1800. So yeah,
it would be.
That's all.
I was gonna say it would be a really big shift for me in a pretty dumb way probably, but I haven't done work on a desktop, like on a tower in ages. I'm not, I losing that flexibility is probably the main deterrent to be able to just take my laptop and work on it somewhere.
Yeah.
To do things. That would be a challenge.
That's my setup at home.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Let me see this. Oh, look at the lights. And man, is that a concave? There's got to be a different word for it. Your screen's bendy, man.
Yeah. It's a ultra wide.
Okay. Mm. But it bends.
Yeah.
You could just put your face in it and then it's VR.
Yeah. It
is. So you're yeah, already you there. Yeah. You don't need VR anymore.
Yeah.
You just put your face way up close and let it immerse you. So I'm sure they have games for that. That's awesome. And all the backlighting.
Yep. RGB, all the things.
I haven't updated, My setup in some time. It's the old, I can't remember what the case is called now. Master Cooler.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would always be scheming to come up with some sort of like thin client that I could, at least in my house, carry around with me. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just I've been so mentally programmed to work on laptops.
I have too. That's a big part of why, my tower is collecting dust and could definitely have parts upgraded, but mostly it just sits there. And sometimes I fire it up and go like, oh, what's life like in Windows these days?
See, I never...
Still sucks.
Yeah.
I've not
done that. I do often kind of play with the idea of switching back to Linux full time.
Mm. I have a Linux laptop still that's gotta do that. I still don't use that every day, obviously, but quite a bit more than my tower for sure.
Yep. I had Ubuntu as my daily driver for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And
18's pretty good.
Yeah.
I liked it. Went ahead and pulled the trigger and upgraded and I had to do some stuff to personalize, because like used to, right? It was like Mac OS, like the way things were arranged, and it just felt like an open source Mac OS basically. And now in 18, it's very Windows feeling, which isn't a surprise since Canonical and Windows is basically the same thing almost these days. But you know, I was still like, oh, Linux, this is still what I like about you. There was something I could download to fully customize the GNOME desktop, actually.
Yeah.
And I was using it so I could arrange everything exactly how I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's the part I liked about
Linux
all along.
So I had a laptop. I think it was a ThinkPad that I was running Ubuntu on back in like, I don't know, it was like version 14 or something.
Probably.
So it's been a bit.
Yeah.
But man, it was such a pain in the ass because none of the Wi-Fi drivers never fucking worked. And I wanted to chuck it through a wall every time I tried to fix it.
Yeah.
And the frustrating thing is like intermittent. Mm. Like sometimes it will work and sometimes it wouldn't
work. Those are the worst because there's no logic. Like, dude. I can't.
Yeah.
I finally
was like, fuck this. And went back to Windows,
which
was horrible.
Yeah.
But it was better than fucking with that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
So my Linux, my Ubuntu is running on HP. The model, but it's a newer one. And so that's kind of,
right.
I installed it on there and then kind of closed my eyes and like, you know, boot it up and go, God, I hope it works. And it did. So yeah.
I mean, and all that stuff, you know, it constantly gets better. So
yeah, exactly.
I think the other really frustrating thing at the time for me was you couldn't get any of the Office products on Linux,
right?
So you had the like Libre sheets, and look, I mean, I appreciate that they exist, but they're not even close to the real thing. At least you've got Google Sheets and stuff now, but
it's true.
And you had that then, but they weren't quite as nice as they are now.
Yeah.
Which
that's still one of my biggest go-tos. Just it's so easy to throw it in the cloud and collaborate.
Right. Yeah.
Which I'm sure Windows diehards out there would be like, oh, you can do the same thing with Microsoft. You just got to pay money for it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. You got to pay money for it.
Yeah.
If you guys, so I was thinking of like the hardware that I had run my Linux stuff on. Have you guys ever used ThinkPenguin or any of those ThinkPenguin restores old hardware?
No, I've wondered.
Linux has it. Makes it Linux. There's Lenovo, I think, makes a Linux pre-installed, pre-configured.
Yeah, they do.
Box, and there's a couple others.
I got one at a yard sale that a shop locally had fixed up like that. Like it came with Ubuntu 12 on it, I think. That was quite some time ago.
I know Dell does that too. Like they sell laptops that with Ubuntu or Linux, some flavor of Linux pre-installed. And so all the hardware works, everything works, you know.
Right.
I should have fucking done that, but I didn't.
Yeah, usually that's not the way that works. You just go like, oh, cool. Got a budget PC. Now I'm going to put some Linux on it.
Yeah. You know, the good thing about those ThinkPads is that so when IBM owned, I guess, that brand, I had one when I worked at Nielsen for a while, but you could like chunk that thing down the hall and it would still fucking work.
Mm.
And they're a little bit more, they're a little bit easier to break now that they're Lenovo, but like things are still pretty tanky.
And they have the holes on the underside of the keyboard so that you can just pour water.
It's kind of incredible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're like, you want to get your kid a laptop? This is the laptop you get. Like,
right. That's kind of how I feel about Macs, largely. I mean, I guess.
They're too pretty to like.
That's true.
I don't know.
I think they could take it, though.
Not the new ones, dude.
You don't want to pour water into that thing.
Well, no. But, I mean, maybe you could throw it down the hall, though.
You might be able to. Let's do it.
Okay,
yeah, we'll use yours.
So the new ones are not as well made as these.
Mm.
We have a bunch of people that have newer ones at work, and the keyboard has stopped working, or keys are like stopped working. The keyboard is just not as good.
Mm.
Also, it feels really weird to type on. I don't know if you tried it yet.
Most people hate the new keyboard, but I actually like it.
Do you? Yeah. I don't like that the keys are like kind of like concave. They like cave in or convex, whichever one. But like you put your fingers on it, like on these, I don't know, they stick up. But on the new ones, it's flat, and the keys kind of go like that. So when you put your finger on it, it rests like here in the middle. I don't like it. It feels weird.
Yeah, I've never typed on one. I've looked at, you know, a couple of our guys got the new ones. Mm-hmm. And what I've heard can be annoying is the
big trackpad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like.
Because I already get my thumb on this one and go, what's my mouse doing over there? That's, why am I typing in that now?
Hey, now are you a light typer?
I don't know. Okay. How do you determine whether you're a light or a heavy typer?
When you type on the new laptop, does it feel like you're going to break it every time you type something?
So I don't actually have one of the new model laptops. I do have the new, like, little wireless keyboard.
Oh, okay. Is it the same? Does it feel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't used one of those. So.
But no, I don't feel like I'm going to break it.
Every time I type on, because I also have one of the new ones at work. And every time I type on that thing, I'm like, my finger's going to go through like this thing. So I must be like.
That can happen sometimes, especially when you try to deploy or something. And
it doesn't work.
Yeah. You just type harder exponentially right. Every time.
That makes it work, I've heard.
Mm.
Just typing harder.
Makes me feel better anyway.
Exactly. So I get a mechanical keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, largely.
So
that's my daily driver.
I want
driver.
To, but people at work have told me not to.
You can get, like, I've got the WASD code keyboard. That's the one, Jeff Atwood, the Coding Love and Stack Overflow fame. He, like, designed that one.
Oh, nice.
It's nice. I like it. But I've got brown switches.
Yeah.
So it's not loud.
Yeah.
We had a guy that I worked with in my last office. Who got intentionally the loudest switches he could. So it's like clack, 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 clack. And then he got into like Mass Drop, has a huge mechanical keyboard community.
Yep.
And so he was putting all kinds of stuff on it. Like he had fidget spinners on his escape key and a couple other places.
Man, that's just
and just
obnoxious.
The most ridiculous keyboard you had ever seen. And he was super proud of it. I'm pretty sure he still has it.
Yeah.
And just like bah, 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 just noise.
Yeah.
And it was nuts.
That's crazy.
Yeah. For something a little more subtle.
I was showing you my dream keyboard that I want to drop like $350 on when I justify that finally.
Now, you were talking about the pouring water on it. I had a recent I don't know if it was water or coffee. Scare with my keyboard, and I was like, oh no, because it stuck my control key, my left control, and so I was like, I just ruined this keyboard. That's not cool. Okay, and then I was like, well, I can get in there and replace a switch potentially, but I ended up like unplugging the keyboard, setting the keyboard upside down, just leaving it alone for about 12 hours. I came in the next day. And plugged it back in, and it worked. And so I was
nice.
I was happy.
Yeah,
didn't even have to use the bucket of rice method.
Nope, just dump it all in a big bucket of rice,
which works.
Oh yeah, totally,
like crazy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I've saved many electronic that way. So, the Kinesis Advantage 2 is the one that I want.
The Mass Drop.
That was ergonomic, right?
Yeah, it's ergonomic. Oh. So it's like
got it,
but it's like super super ergonomic.
Nice. I think I remember you showing this.
Yeah, I show everyone that. I don't know why. It's like subconsciously, am I hoping you guys will buy it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
You need to print out a picture and put it on the back of your desk. So it's
like, let's start a GoFundMe for his keyboard.
Yeah. And that uses Cherry MX Brown switches too on that guy.
I had the keyboard I had before the one I have now at home that I showed you. It had brown on it. Mm. And those are nice. This one has. I want to say it has an orange, the one that I have.
Remind me what orange ones are?
God, I don't even remember.
No, I
like
have
literally have
up.
To look it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here. It's
yeah.
Someone kind, can do this.
It's
orange.
Like mild.
So Yeah, that's what I would think, right? Not the reds.
Yeah, it's not...
Not brown, but yeah. Maybe in between those.
And then I really want the... Masterop makes a mechanical keyboard.
Yeah.
The CTRL or something. And it's super nice. It's $200.
Mm.
And that's the one that I really want someday when I can, like you said, justify spending $200 on a keyboard.
Right. Right.
When will that day be? I don't know.
But. I don't know. This one I'm thinking like, you know, I don't know. Whenever I get probably diagnosed with carpal tunnel syndrome finally, then...
Right, yeah. Totally. When you have to do it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. 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 Kicking that down the road with my ergonomic Microsoft keyboard.
I'll look
right
for
now.
Sure. So didn't you have something that you wanted to ask me about?
Oh, yeah, Tyrell did too. I'm
going to
go ahead
though.
And throw him under the bus, but he can't remember it.
I can't. I'm terrible.
Well, I was, I was looking at squashing migrations in Django, which, is pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how's that work on the JavaScript side of the fence?
So I'm sure that is a thing that has to be done in JavaScript land. I've never done it, though.
Okay. So what do you do, though? I mean, like, what, how's that?
I don't ever work on anything, like, long enough to find out. But, like, that's the real answer. Like, okay, so my role typically... on projects is the guy who gets it to the first release and then I'm gone.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so I'm usually never around when that stuff happens. Like that's just the way it is.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm similar. Like I haven't ever had to do it on a project.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just curious how that works. Cause it's usually like when I'm starting a project and then I get like 15 migrations deep and I've done hardly anything. And I'm just like, oh, that seems kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
How could I squash these? And Django, you have a command that you can do.
Okay.
That'll squash them for you.
What do you mean when you say squash migrations?
So in Django, migrations, I guess they're built on South is what they used to be. Right. And, so they're built in. So you have basically a management tool, command line tool that you can interact, you know, with your application. And so you can do a command, make migrations, and it creates a migration file. And so that manages your database schema for you and changes like that. And so those can get ridiculous.
So let me make sure that I'm understanding. So you have like version 0, you change a bunch of shit, and you create a migration to get to version 1, and that basically takes any data that has changed from version 0 to version 1 and makes those changes in the database. Is that fair?
Basically, yeah.
Okay, and you're saying...
You would do it more granularly, though. That anytime you add a field to a model
or
anything like that, you would do it.
Okay, So,
And then take that field back off the model, and then you get an extra migration.
Yeah, or change the name of that or add a restriction. Anything that you need to do to manipulate the database, you would create a migration for.
Yeah.
So in the beginning on a project, just fucking YOLO. Like there's for us, there's or for me, when I'm doing this, there's no, like, there's nothing there. So there's no migration to it. Because, again, and I guess in addition, almost everything I work on is greenfield. Like we're not taking something, or usually I'm not taking something that exists and then making like porting that over, making changes to something that already exists. It's like nothing exists.
Mm.
And in that case, like not write any migrations, except for when you get to version, the time that I have written something similar to this is persisted state in like Redux. So a user, you have version 0 of the app and you have the state tree. And then you do make a bunch of changes, version 1, and you have to migrate the user from the state in version 0 to the state in version 1. Same concept.
Right.
But never have I had to do it for a database in Node or whatever.
Right.
But I know that people probably do that.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so.
I'm.
They may not use Mongo, but...
Yeah. Well, I'm actually sure that they... I bet that is a thing, but Mongo is so like Dynamic is the word I'm going to use.
Okay. we'll allow it.
That is the nicest way to say what we're all thinking.
That I wonder if you would have to do it in Manga Land.
Yeah. I guess that's sort of where the question came from.
Mongo's just a flat, it's basically a JSON store, correct?
Yeah, it's a document store. Yeah.
So, right? So what happens if your dictionaries are not in sync with one another?
Yeah.
So
here's a car that has a horn, a seatbelt, and a taillight. Mm-hmm. Here's a car with a horn, a seatbelt, a taillight.
It doesn't care.
And a blinker.
It doesn't care.
And it's just like there's no state then to the data. Right. Store.
Well, there's no like absolutely defined schema. All right. Like you have keys, as long as you have a key or whatever, like it doesn't care.
And then of course, if you search on that key and that thing doesn't have that key, it doesn't.
Right. But that's the thing is like, you have to have that, at least this one thing.
Right. Yeah.
And then, but it'll just return whatever. Now, if you're using something, if you're using an ORM, like you can enforce that in a way, but it doesn't really. Like you can just add and take shit away.
I guess Elasticsearch is kind of that way.
Like Elasticsearch.
Yeah.
You said ORM. Are there front end? Like, what would be an example of the like? This is my inexperience with front end frameworks these days. What would be the ORM for say Vue or React? Because the ORM is talking, what's the ORM is talking to what?
The API basically.
So the ORM basically becomes a tool to talk.
And you can even have, and then you probably have something similar on the API that like the talks to.
Yeah, that was amazing.
You know, it's too bad that we didn't check before our deploy on Friday.
First Friday afternoon deploy
failure. We didn't make a punch list.
No,
you know how guys feel. I feel about punch lists.
And as you do, we had to fix our problem the next week.
That's right. That's why you're listening to this on a Monday. Yeah, so I don't know. Alan, do you recall?
Do I remember what happened? So I had a question, as I guess we've heard now. You know, how do you handle relational database migrations in JavaScript?
I don't think that part actually got to disk, but that's where it was going.
That is where it was going, yeah.
Blake's not here, so we get to tell whatever we want his answer to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was MongoDB, you don't.
It just prints to the console in the browser and
pipes to dev null.
You're not here, Blake.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad. But, you know, shit happens. This is what we get for installing Docker on our Tascam.
We ran out of space.
Ran out of hard drive space, you know?
We were going towards, and we talked about the use of what is that? It's everyone loves it now.
Mongoose?
No, it's
the President of the United States.
Oh,
that's the most wide
like
open
Mongoose. Yeah.
It's basically like a JavaScript ORM. It's really big. It's really big.
SQLize is agnostic. Mongoose is the one you use in Express to talk to MongoDB.
No, it's the one that's really big in React Native.
You're talking about like Redux?
No. Wow, I've really... This is what happens when
confused
we
us.
All try and talk about JavaScript without Blake.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the part where Blake's listening going like, he's got fucking...
We all
they've went. Learned nothing.
Nothing!
Oh, you mean jQuery? That's what you mean,
it's
right?
jQuery.
You plug jQuery into your React.
GraphQL.
GraphQL is not an ORM. Come on.
No, I know, but that's kind of ish.
No.
No, it's a protocol.
GraphQL is closer to is REST, essentially.
Right. Yeah. It's the REST alternative.
Yeah. It is, from a front-end perspective, GraphQL kind of eliminates the need for
restful routes, right? You don't need them anymore.
And so what you do is you have a single endpoint that you talk
for
to
your model,
and you talk to it like a data access layer, almost as though you're not. I mean, you guess you kind of are querying it with a DSL. Yes, but it but there's
graphene. I would say graphene maybe is closer
to. But there's no there's no object level like interaction. There's no like JavaScript representation of your data model like in GraphQL itself.
Sure. I'm with you there.
It's like GraphQL is. This analogy is off the rails. I was going to say it's like SQL, but it's not. But the JSON that you fire at it is in a way like SQL.
It's a query language.
Yeah, it's an interface. It's more like it's more like an adapter for a database, except that from the front end just treats GraphQL as the adapter that like real developers did magic for to actually make it talk to a database.
Right. Because the back end part of it. There's no magic. There is no magic of here's my JSON. Now give me the JSON back from the database. Exactly. You have to write all the code to translate.
Right.
That.
Very true.
Yeah.
It's more of a concept.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Blake, a philosophy.
Blake, you're a real developer. Don't let me ever feel like you're not.
Well, he may even be stronger because he uses JavaScript.
He's definitely has a higher physically pain stronger. Tolerance. Like,
mentally to take the abuse, like that. Like.
So JavaScript ORMs. That's where we went for a brief moment.
There was a JavaScript ORM a long time ago in Ember called DS Store, I think.
Oh, they just put that in there.
Became called Ember Data is what it became.
Yeah.
And it was like
that's the one thing I liked. About Ember, and that's probably what's really don't embrace Redux and so much. Vuex is pretty cool. But,
yeah, it was just really easy to plug in. You just pointed it to the route that you wanted.
It was really easy to plug into Rails.
Yeah,
it was
Rails. Okay.
It was motherfucker to
plug. You have to write your own adapter for Django.
That's actually so what we found, we did that on one Ember project when we were deep in Ember for a couple of years. For our that was our main
front end language. Or you can make Django speak
JSON API. Yeah, JSON spec. Yeah. Which is like equivalent to I guess how Rails kind of default like the way it serializes JSON, like the structure of the objects.
Yeah,
I can hear Alan going in on that beer in here, and it's just refreshing.
Oh, good. Yeah. It is for me.
Yeah, too. No, yeah. I meant that honestly.
Okay,
It's a warm Friday.
This is Ozark if you're listening.
Yeah,
Ozark lager.
That sounds like a refreshing Ozark lager, Alan.
I would say that for money. I'll say it anyway.
Let's take a minute to thank our prospective sponsors.
Prospective,
Ozark, Patagonia. anyone else?
NPR. Got ideas?
NPR.
NPR.
The Carnegie Foundation.
NPR sponsors us. We don't sponsor NPR.
Of course, yeah. All things considered, they're looking to add more listenership. So
one of three mattress companies.
Casper, the other ones.
Blue Box.
Yeah. So it's a lager. I usually, if I drink a lager, it's whatever somebody else has at their house, and it's the only thing they have.
And that's what we have at our house right now.
It is.
It's pretty good, though.
It's
honestly good.
It's a very dry lager.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
It's like the champagne of beers, but not the
Not Miller Lite.
Not the trademark champagne of beers.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm drinking a lot of that. But anyway,
on that note,
shit happens. So
you run out of disk space.
Yeah, you got 2/3 of an episode. Be grateful. And we'll see you in slightly less than a week.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow @FridayDeploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.